It's time for JT the Brick.
Reset the show. This is the home of the Raider Nation, where Raider fans have a voice on this. I love putting fans on the radio. I love hearing emotion. I love hearing passion. I love hearing people, if they're critical or they're happy, whatever there is. I like to hear people to know I'm on the radio, not guests if they're listening and wondering if they're out there. And hopefully I bring that to the radio show. Fandom, fandemonium, getting people excited about sports.
JT the Brick.
I care about going to games and winning games. That is it. I like to pause, have a sip of water, and talk to a Raider fan, either in a chat or over the phones, who has something smarter to say than I do, which many do. More knowledgeable fans than me, I admit that. More passionate fans than me, yeah, there's a number of them. But I'm the gateway to getting everybody in here to let it rip. There's never an off season in the Raider Nation. Got it? That's the show.
And now,
fandemonium.
Here's JT the Brick.
Hour number two of the show, as I am live from home today. Backyard Brick. My mom and dad were just out here for 10 days, and they left last night, and I'm home from the home studio today, and it's a glorious day out there as we're on the flagship of the Silver and Black. Raiders working out, OTAs. Not everybody has to be out there every day. A close to perfect attendance. Everybody seems to be on the same page as the Raiders are going through their conditioning, their off-season workouts here as we get ready for some training camp in Costa Mesa, California. Details developing on that topic. We have the best newsmen and women on here in Las Vegas, and one of the best, one of my great friends, Dana Wagner, kind enough to join us from News 3 LV. And you were kind enough to come over to my house and meet my mom and dad and have a great conversation with my dad about sports. I greatly appreciate that, my friend.
Well, first of all, you hit the parent lottery. Your parents are delightful, and your dad is 86, and we were talking about details from baseball from the 1950s. The guy's sharp as a tack. Your mother is beautiful and fun. It was a great evening. It was my pleasure and honor to be able to meet them.
Well, that's one of the many reasons we love having you on, and I wanted to get to that topic we had with my dad in the backyard, because my dad grew up, he got a Yankee tryout when he was 17, he grew up a really good elite high school baseball player, and then he grew up in the bleachers at Yankee Stadium watching DiMaggio and all those great teams. So we're all sitting there, Kevin Higgins, who's in the Southern Nevada Sports Hall of Fame, and Dale Eales. I'm name dropping a lot of guys that were over my house, but when we were having this baseball conversation, the conversation came up, who's the greatest baseball player you've ever seen live? And my dad went, and everybody went. And then it came around the horn to you, my friend. And you had something that was very unique that I thought would be a good topic this hour. Who's the greatest baseball player you've ever seen live?
Shohei Ohtani. And listen, I know I'm going to get pushback on a lot of different things here. And I didn't really follow his career much when he was at the Angels. I'm not sure a lot of people did. Because for some reason, you're in Southern California, and when you play for the Angels, you're in relative obscurity. But the Dodgers are my favorite team, so I've watched parts of every game he's played with the Dodgers, and I had no idea he was this good. Now, he's young, right? So he's got to do it for longer amount of time to be considered, you know, the greatest to do it, or even among the greats. But when I look for a flaw in his game, I can't find it. I mean, the guy hit an opposite run home run against the Mets yesterday that I've just never seen anybody do before. People hit opposite field home runs all the time. He's a left-hander, so this thing went to left center. Mm-hmm. But his body was moving away from the plate, and he has so much power. I mean, he hits the ball so hard. At one point in the season, he had the two hardest hit balls in the major leagues this season. He had the top two, and neither one was a home run. So the guy, I mean, he hits for average, right? He's near the top of the league in average. He hits for power. I think he's got 14 dingers now. He knocks in runs, and I don't think he's been caught stealing. I think he has 13 or 14 bags this season. So he runs like the wind. Oh, yeah, did I forget? He's also a great pitcher. Now, he's not pitching this season, but he will next year. But, the pitching aspect, I think, for me, is what puts him over the top. I mean, Mantle hit for power, average, could run like a deer as well, but Mantle didn't pitch. And Ohtani, that's what sets him apart in my mind.
Yeah, I love that answer that you had, and the reason I wanted to have you on today is my dad talked about it for days after that, and he really respected your answer there because, you know, old school baseball fans, and there are many old school baseball fans that just don't want to go with no rules, runner on second base, the ghost runner in the 10th inning, all of this. But I really like your answer about Ohtani. And I haven't seen Ohtani play live, and I watched a lot of his games with the Angels. I might have saw one Yankee Angels game. I saw him play against the Padres and Trout, the game that Trout got hurt last year. So I did see him play once, and I agree with you. The best player I've ever seen live play, and there were a few, but if I had to go with one, as I said, for me, my hero was Thurman Munson, the catcher for the Yankees, and I loved Derek Jeter. But I saw Tony Gwynn play a lot in San Diego, Dana, and whenever I went to a game, he'd have four at-bats, and he'd get two hits. And I'm not making it up. It was a single and a double, or two doubles, and that was the greatest hitter I've ever seen. But with Ohtani, I think you're on to something here, because the rules changed yesterday with Josh Gibson as we're using the Negro League stats. Now Josh Gibson has a better on-base percentage than Babe Ruth. Ty Cobb, he passes with the all-time average. But I really believe, like you said, Ohtani, if he can pitch again, he'll be judged as a hitter. The pitching will put him over the top. We'll only be able to debate Babe Ruth, and Babe Ruth played in a completely different era, so I think you're right.
Yeah, and with Babe Ruth, you're right. It was a different era for sure, and look what Babe Ruth, I mean, he changed the game, right? One single player. I mean, the year that he hit 60, I think that he had more home runs than almost every team in the league, one guy.
Right.
So, but and he only pitched early in his career. He only pitched, I think, with the Red Sox. I'm not sure he ever pitched with the Yankees. So that's another difference, too, is Ohtani has done both his entire career. And the plan is, yep, to get him back on the bump next year for the Dodgers. Right now, he's not even playing in the field. He's just a DH. But when he comes to the plate, you stop what you're doing. You just want to watch this guy. You just want to watch him play. You want to watch him hit. You want to watch him run. And he does it with such joy, too. I mean, I know there's a language barrier, but his teammates absolutely love playing with the guy. And wouldn't you? I mean, he's got this great attitude, and he's such a great player, and he helps you win games. So,
Dana Wagner is our guest, News 3 LV. So, Dana, I want to also spend some time talking to you about the growth of Vegas as the sports and entertainment capital of the world. It was always the entertainment capital of the world. Now with sports, with the Aces as the two-time champs, you've seen the Raiders. You're a season ticket holder. I see you at the games. And what we're seeing with UNLV football getting better, the Aviators, and what Don Logan's done out here in downtown Summerlin. When you're on the news weekly and you look at the sports element of the sports and entertainment capital of the world, what do you see?
So I never thought it would happen. I moved to the state in 1991. I moved to Las Vegas in 2001. And I never, ever thought we'd see what we're seeing today. I mean, there was an inkling that maybe down the road, someday we might get an NBA team. That was kind of, and look at this. That's going to be the final four, right?
Yeah.
Of the leagues to come here. It's amazing. It's NHL, NFL, Major League Baseball, and the final one is going to be NBA, and I think that's going to happen in the next 5 to 7 years. But the big change, the sea change, the whole reason for all of this is the proliferation of sports betting across our country. Mm-hmm. That was the chain around our neck. That's what held us back forever. And the size of our city, we're still a very small town in that regard. But when you factor in, you know, 40 million visitors every year, it changes the size of your city in a hurry. But without the change in the attitudes towards sports betting, the National Football League wouldn't touch us with a 10-foot pole as soon as 10, 20 years ago, and now they really embraced our city. I mean, hosting a Super Bowl? Are you kidding me? Just tells you the sea change in attitudes about sports betting, not only among the people who live in this country, but also the people that run the major professional sports leagues, and the biggest one being the National Football League.
Dana Wagner, News 3 LV. So how do you come to grips? Because I'm having a difficult time, the difference between tourists and real fans. You know, we don't hide the fact. I spent a lot of time with you at the Raider games, and we've seen some of the big crowds come in from San Francisco to Kansas City. When you see that, knowing that this is a work in progress, I try to tell people, these are baby steps. Everyone wants to come to a Raider game from out of town, the opponent team. That's not going to last forever. But if the Raiders start winning and winning a lot of playoff games, those numbers will dwindle with the opposing fans being able to get into the games. And then you go to a UNLV basketball game on certain nights and they can barely fill the lower bowl. You mentioned it's a small town. There's only so much expendable money to go around with the influx of all the entertainment, the restaurants, the tourist attractions, and sports. How much longer can this town handle that? Because I still see a lot of growth ahead.
Well, and it bothers the hell out of me when you go to a Raiders game and that lower bowl, especially on the visiting side, is filled with all their fans. I mean, I remember many games where I was like, there literally looks like more opposing fans than home fans for these games. Pittsburgh Steelers really stands out to me, but mm-hmm. you know, you can name a lot of different teams that have a fan base that want to come to Las Vegas and watch their teams play. But the key is, you're right, we have a finite amount of local people here, but look what happened to the Golden Knights, JT, mm-hmm. when they were winning and they were on their run, when you were going to the playoff games on the season that they won the Stanley Cup championship. I mean, it was almost all Golden Knights fans. Maybe 5 to 10% of the opposing fans were in there, and what was the difference? They were winning. The entire community was behind it, so it was 17, 18,000 Golden Knights fans going to those games. The same thing is going to happen with the Raiders. And we're not just drawing from Southern Nevada for the Raiders. We're drawing from the Bay Area. We're drawing from Southern California. And Raider Nation is vast. So you have people from around the country who love that team who will come to support their team if they're winning. Right now, they may be on the precipice of that. That's a big conversation that's being held right now as we have OTAs going on in Henderson. But if the team wins, you're going to see a lot more locals and a lot fewer opposing fans.
All right, Dana, last local question. I moved here in 96. I moved back full-time in 09. I've been here a long time, and the older I get, the more I want to get out of here in the summer. But I work a lot. You work a lot when you're doing the weather on News 3 LV. I've always said 95 feels like 85, 100 feels like 90, 105 feels like 100, 110 feels like 105, but 115 feels like 115. When do we get out of here? What is the trend showing? Will this be a brutally hot summer, or will it be marginal, what we've been used to for the last 20 or 30 years?
So there's no way to predict what the entire summer is going to be like. Last year, we caught a break.
Yes.
In that, our first 100-degree day of 2023 did not come till June 30th. Ooh. That was a record. And we only had some 55 days in triple digits last summer. Now, it was the hottest July on record. So, you know, I throw that caveat in there. Sure, we had one hot month, but it was a great summer. But there was no predicting either way. Our 7-day forecast now has every day into triple digits for the next 7 at least. Mm. So is it going to be a long, hot summer? No way to know. But you're right. When it's dry around here, I tell everybody, June's a great month. Yeah, it tops out the triple digits, but you have 5% humidity, 100 degrees in 5%. You know the heat index, right? Mm-hmm. Where you add the temperature and you add the humidity and the feels like temperature is above the actual temperature. Well, the converse is true as well. When you have low humidity, then the feels like temperature is below the actual temperature. So you're not kidding. When you say 100 around here feels like it's 93, that's true. That's an actual mm-hmm. thing. So June, that's usually before our monsoon hits. We have very dry atmosphere. It feels cooler than it actually is outside. But when July hits and we start to see that moisture seep in from the south, our thunderstorm season, mm-hmm. that's when it gets a little hot and muggy around here. July and August really are the toughest 2 months around here.
All right, you should be okay with your Dodgers. Acuna's out for Atlanta. The Mets are a joke, and they're a big payroll team. The Cubs are not going to be an impact. But the Phillies are looming, and Bryce Harper, who you followed his whole career since he's 16, and everything he's done in this town. So it's your Dodgers and who? Because my Yankees are for real, but that wouldn't be to the World Series, and that's probably not going to happen. As a Dodger fan, who are you most concerned about August and September to go after your team?
Okay, so I got to admit here, I'm far from an expert on other baseball teams. The Dodgers are my squad, so I will watch at least a little bit of 98% of Dodger games this season. So I know my Dodgers. However, that being said, I do follow the standings, and it looks like the Phillies are on fire right now. So what their weaknesses are, I can't tell you. Bryce Harper could win another MVP, his third. That could happen this summer for sure. They also had that Bryson Stott kid who grew up here, played for UNLV, so it's kind of fun to be able to watch two local guys on this super team. But I wouldn't count out Atlanta. I know Acuna is gone, and he's probably their best player. But even without him, I think the Braves are loaded. I think they're stacked. So right now, as a Dodger fan, I'm concerned about seeing either one of those teams in the playoffs. But I think toe-to-toe, player for player, Dodgers are getting pitchers back. Mm-hmm. I mean, we have better pitchers on IR than we do starting in a rotation right now. Once those guys come back into the lineup, I think the Dodgers are going to be a tough out. So I got to tell you, we're not afraid of anybody.
Look forward to getting a beverage with you and having a great summer. Thanks for doing this, my friend.
Thanks for having me on. Appreciate it, JT, and it was great meeting your folks.
Thank you. Dana Wagner, appreciate that. Yeah, it was really cool to introduce him to my mom and dad. And again, I wanted to have Dana on because my dad, who's 86, they were talking baseball, and Dana was so into what my dad was saying, and my dad was so into what he was saying because we went around this horn with baseball, who's the greatest baseball player you saw, and, you know, my dad says DiMaggio and Mantle. You had to pick one. I think he said DiMaggio, better than Mantle. And we go around. I say Tony Gwynn, and Kevin Higgins is bringing up a name, my buddy Dale, and then he goes Otani. Everybody just sat in the circle and said, wow, really? Yeah, he backed it up. Otani is the best player he ever seen and will go down in baseball history to many, possibly as the greatest baseball player of all time. But I'll say this in any pushback I have, because I'm a Yankee fan with Aaron Judge. If it's Judge versus Otani, and Otani's not pitching, and he's not pitching. Let's remember he's not pitching. He doesn't look injured to me, but he can't pitch. That sounds weird to me. How could you be injured where you can't throw a baseball, but you can play the outfield or DH and hit home runs? So I don't know if he's going to pitch the rest of his career. They might look at it and say it's too risky to let him pitch because he can severely injure himself. So if I had to choose between Otani and Judge, I'd take Judge. I think Judge is really good defensively. He's a great power hitter. If you give Otani the edge, it's not by much. So for those who say Otani is the next Babe Ruth or the greatest player, give me a break. Bryce Harper doesn't pitch and Judge doesn't pitch. And I'll put them right there with Otani. But when Otani pitches, it changes everything. Thanks to Dana Wagner, part of the Newsmen that we have here on the show, and we really appreciate him. 702-365-9200 is the number if you want to get through here. Again, I'll do one or two calls a day. I'll do none. I'll do 50. Whenever you want to talk about sports, we try to mix it up here in the month of May as we head into June. Coming up next, I'm pretty frustrated about the way athletes treat authority. I am. I'm going through a point in time now where I'm really starting to get upset with the way NBA players treat the refs and how players treat authority. That would be the umpires, referees. I want to get into that a little bit. And the Mets had a pitcher last night that threw his glove into the stands. And something happened earlier today that might have changed my mind on his behavior last night. We'll get into that on the other side. I want to thank Alex and Orlando DeCastaverde, the DeCastaverde Law Group. The brothers have your back. Their dad was an icon and built this law firm. And all the work that he did, working late at night, overnights, to try to build up a law firm that now has passed down to the brothers, and the brothers have your back. His sons, the brothers now, are fantastic when it comes to a law group. They have young attorneys on the scene. When I walk through their office, I get inspired to see how everybody is engaged to try to help out victims, clients, people that need help. If you get into an accident and you're injured, call 702-222-9999. That's 702-222-9999. When we come back, we'll dive into the Mets meltdown and some of the behavior of NBA players. Am I the only one who can't watch Luka Doncic? I don't think I could watch this kid play anymore. He's a great player. I can't handle watching him. But Kobe was also like that too. Kobe was always whining and complaining to the refs, and he was one of the greatest players ever. JT, this is the flagship of the Silver and Black. Q's coming up at the top of the hour. Don't miss his show.
Lopez pitch. And Choi hits one well to left field. This ball's back, and this ball is gone. Shohei Ohtani with a two-run shot. It is 9-3. And the show rolls on here in New York.
Welcome back to the flagship of the Silver and Black, Raider Nation Radio, JT, as we keep rolling on here on a beautiful Thursday, man. This week went fast. It went fast. As I said earlier, my parents are back home safe and sound as they took the red eye last night on JetBlue. How is my dad at 86? Taking the red eye, explained to my son earlier today because Grandpa likes to save money. He's been really successful in life because he doesn't throw away money. But I did tell my mom and dad, no more red eyes. No more red eyes. I do red eyes. You're not doing red eyes anymore. But my folks were able to make it home. They are safe up in New Paltz, New York, all the way coming back from Las Vegas, where we just had a fabulous time, man. Unbelievable time. And I played Wynn Golf yesterday. I mentioned that, which was one of the most incredible experiences I've ever had out on the golf course. So let me jump in and tell everybody, Ice Cube, I tweeted out, you know, part of my deal with M Resort. You might say, JT's tweeting about the M. Well, that's, they're a partner of the show, and part of my deal is I go out there and I tweet, and they ask me to send out some tweets because we're business partners, M Resort Spa and Casino. So if you didn't get a chance to see, Ice Cube is coming to town. And as you take a look at Ice Cube, who's the official president of Raider Nation, he is. You can ask him. I'm great with that. Have no problem with that. M Resort retweeted. So the pre-sale is today at Ice Cube. Use the code SMCUBE. SMCUBE at M Resort. Ice Cube, Friday, September 20th at the M Pool. Now, you know I love the M Pool. We had Gridiron Greats. We've had events out there. We've had, this year, we had the Gridiron Greats huge cigar party, and unfortunately, it was really cold. It was ice cold out there, and it was standing room only still with the band. Everybody had a great time. The pool out at the M Resort is great, so if you're driving out to the Raider facility, or you're driving through Henderson, or if you get off the 15, you see the M Resort, jump on in there, from the restaurants to the Raiders Tavern, to everything that they do there from gaming, and it's the official resort of the Silver and Black. Appreciate it if you go check it out. Ice Cube, Friday, September 20th at the M Pool. I love that. That'll be a lot of fun. One of the things that I wanted to talk about today is I'm passionate about sports and topics, and some days it's not going to be all Raiders like today. Not going to be all Raiders today, even though OTAs and there's some good things happening here. But again, this is a drama-free summer so far starting. Knock wood. We'll see what happens here, but love what's happening here. The Mets made the news today and yesterday, and this morning I went and had coffee with my business partner here at Lotus Broadcasting, Andrew Paul. He does a lot of sales and a lot of work with the partners I have here on the radio. Anyway, he's a diehard Met fan. So the Mets had an experience last night in the Dodgers' loss. They lost 10-3, where their reliever closer, Jorge Lopez, threw his glove into the stands after being ejected, which was wackadoodle crazy, and he just threw it into the crowd, and a lot's happened since. So I want to get you up to date on this. It's a massive topic in sports. Follow me here for a moment. So, you know, you look at what happened. He's a two-run homer to Shohei Ohtani. He fell behind 3-1 to Freddie Freeman. Then he started chirping with the third base ump, Ramon DeJesus, on a check swing. He got ejected from the game. And then he called his team, the Mets, the worst team in baseball. This is Jorge Lopez last night after he was ejected.
Carlos Mendoza said that he understands the emotion, but that particular action of throwing your glove into the stands was unacceptable. Looking back on it, do you regret doing that?
No, I don't regret it. I think I've been looking the worst team in probably in the whole MLB. So, you know, whatever happened. So whatever they want to do it. I'll be tomorrow here if they want me, you know, whatever they want to do. So I'm going to keep doing this thing, you know, so I'm healthy on whatever, you know, on whatever to do. You know, I'm ready to come back tomorrow if they want me to be here. So I'll be here.
So you just heard from him. He was very erratic on what was happening there. So I was talking to my buddy Andrew today, who's a diehard Met fan. And it's an interesting topic. So we're done having coffee. I come home. I'm prepping for the show. I'm doing the show from home today. And I find this tweet from Boomer Esiason. Now, Boomer has the big morning show in New York on WFAN. And he got some clarity on this issue. And this was earlier today. So Boomer started off his show ripping Jorge Lopez, rightfully so. He's having a terrible year. He threw his glove into the crowd and the Mets cut him. The Mets let him go. So this was crazy what was happening here. And I thought he deserved it until I heard this. This is from Boomer Esiason just a few short hours ago.
I did not know this about Jorge Lopez. I found out about 20 minutes ago as a friend of mine, Nunes, sent me an email in regards to Jorge Lopez's personal life and what he has been going through with he and his wife, Carla, and their son. And I can totally understand why you may lose it on the field the way that he did. And I could also totally understand now why internally they may have handled it a little bit differently than I would have liked it. So his son, as I understand, is waiting for a transplant. And it's a very serious situation. And I don't know what's going through this young man's head. All I do know is that there was a year where I had to play without knowing what Gunnar was going through.
Yeah.
And I know exactly how difficult that is to try to balance those two things. So I want to offer an apology to Jorge Lopez and what I said this morning about how I thought Luis Mendoza should have handled it.
Carlos Mendoza.
I mean, Carlos Mendoza should have handled it.
So after you hear that his son is going through, seems like a life-threatening situation, and it changes everything. So why am I bringing this up? I wanted to talk about his behavior last night. And after they talked to him and they put him on assignment, I'm sure the Mets organization understood what was going on. But the Mets are now 22-33, 16 games out of first place. It's New York. It's not even the summer. I consider the summer June, July, and August. That's what I consider the summer. I grew up 20 minutes from where the Mets play. And we didn't have a lot of good weather in my whole life in New York. It either rained, it was snowing, it was cold, or gray. So Met fans want to go to the ballpark in the summer, have a couple of beers, a couple of dogs, and watch games, and no one's showing up. So they had a players-only meeting last night, 30 minutes, an opportunity for the players to speak up, hold each other accountable. But I just wanted to tell you how a story can change, right? So if I was on the air last night, I would have said, this guy's a nut, cut his ass, he embarrassed his team, worst teammate, worst team in the NFL, and everybody got a shot at this earlier today. Everybody got a shot at this, from McAfee to all the other shows. And I think I just wanted to show you how things can change. The reaction of us sports radio guys and gals to go nuts over something that happens. And then you get some clarity on the fact that he has a child who's waiting on a medical condition and a transplant and what's going to happen there. So I wanted to play that, and it changed my opinion on this. Now, that leads me to another topic. So that's a story that's important because it's the biggest story in sports today. And if you don't hear it from me, who the hell are you going to hear it from? I hope there's other shows talking about this because New York's the number one media market. The number two media market is L.A. with the Dodgers. It's a big Dodger topic today because the Dodgers beat the Mets. So I'm watching basketball as my dad was out here with my sons, and I'm just pulling my hair out for the men who yell at the referees. Luka Doncic, Kobe Bryant did it a lot, the late, great Kobe Bryant when he was alive, and I love Kobe. I'm having a really tough time watching the NBA because of the fact that the players whine and blank and moan on every foul, and they yell at the referees. If I was a referee, I would tee these guys up the entire game. I'd walk on the court. I'd sit there and I'd go, look, no one's here to watch me. I'm the referee. The game's not about me. It's about you. If you disrespect me and yell at me and make me look bad and continue to berate me, I'm going to give you a technical foul. The league, the NBA, is out of control. The players are lunatics. They're yelling at the ref on every single play. I got hit here. They're making that sign with their finger. Go review every foul. Every time they get touched, they scream at the referee. This is not the way you treat authority in sports. Period. It's a good summer topic. I'm not there yet, but it's the same thing with parents at these Little League games, right? These parents who are supposed to watch their kids there, and they can't shut up, and they're yelling at the umpire, and the kid's 9 years old, and they're yelling at the ump. And the ump is in a position of authority. Yes, the ump, even if it's not an adult, even if the ump, if we're talking about an umpire here, and an umpire in a youth game is only 14 years old, he's in charge. and everybody in the society is getting used to yelling at authority. So I just wanted to tell you the story started off with the Mets cutting Lopez after he threw his glove in the crowd. He had some mental issues going on at the time. It gives a little clarity to it. But when I get to the NBA, I don't know if you agree with me on this or not. I'm getting to the point, I'm going to watch it. I get paid to watch sports and talk about it on the radio. Very easy job if you can get it. I watch TV, I talk about it. I go to Raider games live, I talk about it. That's it. But I got to find the topics that make the most sense. And today I couldn't wait to get on the radio and talk about this on the way sports are different now. In NASCAR, there are officials. There are individuals who sit in a TV booth and they watch a NASCAR race. And if you bump someone, if you hit someone, if you do something illegal, if your pit stop is wrong and you get into the pit and you come out illegally, they're going to dock you a lap. They're going to do something. And you don't see drivers get out of their cars in the middle of a race and want to go take the elevator and go beat someone up in a TV tower. Then you go to baseball. Baseball, if you start chirping at the umpire, you know that the umpire is going to look at you and eventually say, that's a warning. And they'll eject you from the game. Then we go to hockey. When was the last time? I watch a lot of hockey. When was the last time you saw a hockey player, please help me with this, get ejected from a hockey game because he was yelling at the refs? I'm sure it's happened. I don't recall ever seeing it. I've been going to hockey games since I've been 11 years old. I don't remember anyone. I remember guys getting thrown out of hockey games for fighting. Yeah, for fighting. Hey, you're gone. But never for yelling at a referee. I've never seen it live. So we get hockey out of the way. Football. What I love about the NFL is that the authority of the officials. If you yell at the lead ref, and there's female referees now, line judges, back judges. You yell at the refs, the flag comes out potentially, and you're going to get a 15-yard penalty. And football players only play one game a week. And the average football player is not on the field for more than 20 minutes. Right? Offense, defense, special teams. If you get ejected from a football game or you cause a penalty for your team for 15 yards and it costs you the game, you're never going to hear the end of it. So it doesn't happen much in football because of the severity of them only playing once a week and a 15-yard penalty and an ejection for unsportsmanlike conduct is a pretty big thing. But in basketball, I am sick of this. I despise it. It's hurting the sport. The next time you watch Luka Doncic play, watch for 5 minutes, maybe the best player in the world. One of the best players in the world, top three, not top five, Luka Doncic. Every time he dribbles up the court, he's talking to a ref. Every time there's a foul, he's barking at a ref. It's out of control. It's nuts. Where do you stand on the authority of listening to authority during a sporting event? It could be, again, youth soccer. It could be youth baseball, youth basketball. How many times do you look on social media and on Twitter and see there's a fight at an AAU game where a dad's coming out of the crowd wanting to fight someone because they tackled their son underneath the basket? It's insanity what's happening now in sports because the referees, the umpires in various sports get absolutely no respect. So I've been going on here for about 11 or 12 minutes, but I have to. This is what I do. I'm a sports talk host. This is what drives me nuts. Is the inability to respect authority. I'm in a radio studio. If I go into my general manager's office and start yelling at her, I'm going to get fired. Not warned. I'm not going to get suspended. I'm going to get fired. That is workplace behavior. Well, in sports, we're getting to a point, and this has been going on for a long time. Boxing referees. You want to go after a boxing referee? You want to yell at a boxing referee throughout a fight to see what happens? Okay, they have probably the most authority as a boxing referee in a big fight if they're good. But when it comes to basketball, man, I'm having a really difficult time watching this sport. The insanity of these players disrespecting the refs, screaming at them every play, giving that little finger whip around, go review it, screaming, and then barely getting a technical foul. And the referees do a pretty good job in the postseason. Those are the best refs. They're the best ones who get to work the finals and the conference finals, and they're there for a reason, and they're getting screamed at the entire game. So I definitely have a different perspective after that Boomer Esiason soundbite, but if you're going to throw your glove and you're a professional athlete and you're going to get kicked out of a game, you're probably going to get cut. And the Mets, this is a big story in New York that I wanted to make you aware of. Bill Williamson, Vinny Bonsignor tomorrow. Vinny's going to join us at 12:30. We'll do a deep dive with Vinny at OTAs. Q's out there every day with his schedule. He does an amazing job asking questions at the podium and witnessing practice. And then all of the NFL insiders that we have coming up, we're adding another one who's really good this year. So we're going to have about 9 to 10 Raider or NFL insiders that will join us in a grid. Each of them will join us once every 2 weeks. We're building that out now to give you the in-depth team coverage you need of the Raiders here. And I don't know, maybe next year there won't be any OTAs. The way this is trending, the way that the NFL is trending, and what was leaked out this week about the ability to wipe out OTAs and just go to an expanded training camp, that could happen. What are we going to do? What are we going to do sitting around at the end of May and June if there's no OTAs? And there's only classroom study. That'll be a little bit of a curveball on a flagship of a NFL team, but we'll adjust accordingly. Want to thank our great partners, and this is a great one, Remy Martin Team Up for Excellence. They are activated at all the pools here in the Valley. So if you go in a pool party, you go to a concert, you go see a DJ, go up to the bartender, ask for a Remy Martin cocktail, the VSOP. Also, they do an unbelievable job at Remy Martin, making sure from the Cointreau in your margarita at the pool, and cover up your drink in the pool. Cover up your drink in the pool or have your drink in the cabana. But wherever you go in town, Remy Martin teams up for excellence. Proud partner of our show as we wrap it up here at the top of the hour. I miss my folks. They just settled in New York. And I'm excited for what should be a great weekend. And remember, those Ice Cube tickets on sale at the M. Go grab a pair or four or five. And it's a good weekend if you're a Raider fan, wink, wink, on the flagship of the Silver and Black.
I think he really did. I think he grew, you know. I think you learn, you know, one of the things people ask me, what do I need to know when I become a head coach? And one of the things I would tell him is tomorrow will be better. And I think you learn how to try to level out a lot of those peaks and valleys. And I think those are the things that are important. You know, he had to make, there was a couple things that occurred where they made roster decisions, you know. And I think you learn from every time you have to make one of those decisions during the season, where you're changing players in and out and so forth. And I think that's also part of this job, is having a certain pulse and a feel for that, that you can't necessarily hurry into decisions. You got to make sure you weigh the pros and cons of those things.
That's Marvin Lewis. I thought his media availability was fantastic. We played about 7 or 8 minutes of it yesterday, and when I went back and watched it again, prepping for the show, he is a calming voice. He is a mentor to Antonio Pierce, and he's going to have to step up at points throughout the course of this year when things are going right or not going right, and have to be there privately with Antonio Pierce, giving him guidance and doing what he's supposed to do. He's here for a reason. I like what he said. I got a good friend of mine who's a sports talk host in Baltimore who knows Marvin Lewis well and came out here and spent some time with him. And they spent some private time together, and he called me and said he's thrilled about this opportunity. And then I bumped into Coach at the Raiders golf tournament. We spoke for a few minutes, and he just seems to be going through life at this stage of his life, really happy to help Mark Davis and this organization become a better team. And that's important. He's going to play a role in what the Raiders do this year, and hopefully it's going to be a big role and something that's going to help out. JT, back with you. There is a verdict. If you follow trials, there's a verdict that was just reached. You can find that wherever you go find your news. We're a sports talk show. Q is coming up next, so he'll have a big show lined up for you also. One of the things I wanted to hit on, we got another piece of sound that Bobby grabbed, important, on what's going to happen going forward with OTAs and the new training camps in years to come. I think this is going to move rapidly. I think it's going to move very rapidly into next year. This could be the last year we have OTAs where players are on the field. Maybe they'll be in the classroom next year. Ian Rappaport talked about it earlier today on NFL Network.
First of all, this is not directly related to the 18-game season. This proposal could fit in with an 18-game season, but that is not something that is directly related. I did reach out to someone very well-versed in the leagues, thinking usually, Tom, when you have an NFLPA proposal, something we've learned over the last, I don't know, couple of decades, usually the NFL pushes back. I'm sure there's going to be pushback, but at its base here, I would describe this as being pretty welcome, mostly because the NFL and NFL officials have spent plenty of time meeting with medical personnel, coaches, trainers, trying to be more effective in the offseason, trying to reimagine the offseason, say, maybe we can do this in a better way. And the fact that there was the slow ramp up last year, the first true offseason in a couple of years, and players missed 700 fewer games, made them think, the league personnel think, you know what, maybe this, the ramp up, maybe that is in fact better. Now, a couple other notes. This wouldn't necessarily mean changes to the league calendar. It could, but it would not necessarily mean that. The other thing this could do is would allow players in the spring, if no OTAs, to focus on the classroom, focus on financial literacy, focus on how to be an NFL player, rules, all the other things, rather than have to worry about football and then the classroom work. So certainly could be beneficial for all.
Yeah, Ian Rappaport said something very important in that line about the ramp up. The ramp up would be to play football, right? You ramp up in training camp, right? In the preseason, you ramp up to play football. And again, if you have less work in the offseason, will that help your football team? Will it help keep your football team healthier? And what Rappaport said there at the end was the ability to see less injuries going forward. The owners would like that, the players would, the union would like that, but I don't know how it works out. I look at the Raiders and media differently. I look at it as a business. What I do here is a business. It's a radio show, but we are running a business here. I like the way it's set up now. I liked four preseason games, extra paycheck, more travel, more fun. I like OTAs because we have something to talk about in May and June. And then training camp is always fun because it's work and you get a chance to be around the organization. I don't focus a lot on OTAs on this show, never have. It's worked out pretty well for me. We'll cover the storylines, injuries, or what the athletes say or what happens. But I really focus this show right after the summer when we go balls out into training camp and into the preseason. Because a lot of the fluff that pops up when you got 90-plus guys and you know a number of them aren't going to make the team, a lot of that doesn't make my radio show. I don't want to talk about that because I think it's wasted air, wasted time. But some people disagree. Every day is important. These young men are trying to get jobs. They're trying to find their way into the league. Many of them are undrafted. So this is the fight of their life, and I respect that. I respect that, but you know, I don't want to do a lot of it because I think there's going to be so much change. And when everybody really gets going around training camp and the preseason games, I'm just encouraged that this preseason, I think we're going to see something different. John Gruden was pretty intense. Josh McDaniels was very intense. Antonio Pierce seems to be pretty intense too, but more of a player's coach. I'm interested, not looking forward to, that's not the right term. I'm very interested to see how Antonio Pierce runs his first training camp. How many days off? How many rewards? Hey, you had a good day. You don't have to be here tomorrow. Hey, we're going to do this differently. I don't know. But I know he's really locked in with the players and with Marvin Lewis and Joe Philbin and a lot of the other coaches with experience. He will lean on them to find out how hard he's going to push this team. But I think there's going to be an incentive on the preseason this year because of the degree of difficulty on the first two games of the season. At least that's what I think. Those opening games at LA and out at Baltimore, this team's got to be peaking and playing really good and hopefully coming out of the preseason healthy. Have a great rest of the day, everybody. Appreciate you listening. If you're on YouTube, subscribe, JT the Brick, YT. And we'll see you back here tomorrow for Mandelo Friday.
Appreciate it. Thank you, guys.